This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
The United States Army's Fort Hunter Liggett in Monterey County is larger than all the other Army Reserves training installations combined. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a visit with the base commander at Fort Hunter Liggett, Colonel Carrie Norman, as she talks about the diversity of training exercises that attract Marine, Navy, and Air Force detachments from across America, as well as Joint Force soldiers from around the world, including Canada, England, South America, and Saudi Arabia. Fort Hunter Liggett is an ideal training environment with 170,000 acres of rugged and mountainous terrain that replicates more than 20% of the Earth's diverse geographic environments, including Afghanistan and Southeast Asia. Colonel Carrie Norman. Come along and join me with the commander of the base, Carrie Norman. Hi.
Hey, Tom. It's good to see you. Come back here. We love having you here.
My pleasure and honor. One of the things about Fort Hunter Liggett, which is in Monterey County in the middle of nowhere, 26 miles to King City and probably, 26 miles over to the Big Sur coast?
Well, if you go over the mountain the way Mr. Hirsch did, it might be about 26 miles.
You really are hidden away, and yet here's a major training base. It's a substantial base cadre that are here every day.
It's a substantial group of permanent party. We have a lot of transient folks that come through. And part of the beauty of this installation is, one, we're large. We are the seventh largest installation in the entire Army land-wise. Personnel-wise, permanent party-wise, we're not the largest. Our cantonment area, which is our major permanent buildings, not as large as many installations, but we have 170,000 acres. So what that creates is a wonderful training environment, an austere training environment. And the interesting thing about our post is 70% of the earth, I think, is covered by water. Mm-hmm. Most installations replicate about 10% of the earth's land. And we uniquely cover about 20% of different parts of the world here as far as training.
Give us an example of some of the diversity of terrain that might replicate Afghanistan, for example, Iraq.
Mountains. I mean, if you think about Afghanistan, you can have your main operating base and then you can set up different things up in the mountains. So you could replicate that. Korea, you can replicate, not just Korea, really, anywhere in Asia, you can replicate a lot of the land that's there. I mean, so many different countries, not just those two, but just so many different countries that are mountainous, dry, you know, really challenging terrain. So it's not just those two countries, but numerous.
And then you have your open meadows and valleys and my closer to a Mediterranean climate?
Yeah, you could, absolutely. More of a European, kind of a more drier European part. A lot of people that have trained in Germany say there's facets of the post that remind them of Germany. So it's kind of everybody, you know, the different visiting general officers or admirals or whoever comes to train here with their unit, they all seem to be able to align it to somewhere they've been.
In the National Guard, that's an integral part of your operation, isn't it?
Well, we are partnered with Camp Roberts, which is a California National Guard installation, mm-hmm. and we share boundaries with them, and we share a long, what we'd call a tank trail with them. So basically, they're our very good neighbor.
But you have guardsmen that train here too,
oh,
right?
I have guardsmen, I have airmen, I have Navy, Special Operations, we have some of our international partners, there's some Canadians here right now, we've had the British jump in here, so this is just a multifaceted training post.
And tell us about, in this training component, some of the areas of specialization, you know, why they want to come here beyond the geology.
Well, beyond the geology, I think that they come here because it enables them to create and facilitate whatever they want to train on. So it's not really restricted in many ways. Because of the land, we have great barracks. Most state-of-the-art barracks, we just had 7th Infantry Division here, which is an active duty striker division brigade, came down, and they'd never seen such modern barracks. And General Burleson accredited us with his success when he went down to the National Training Center. They did exceptionally well after their rotation here. So you can come in as a commander, and you can come in with a plan of how you want to do things. We work with you to make that happen, to facilitate great training. But you can also, once you get down here, if you kind of change the way you want to do business or how you want to train, or you see another opportunity and something else, you can have your soldiers or airmen or Marines or Navy men, sailors rather. You can change kind of midstream as long as you work with us, and we can make it happen for you.
And another component that a lot of people don't realize, you can drop in a C-130 or two as you recently did.
Yeah, well, C-17s as well.
Really?
That's larger birds.
That's really cool.
I have a different airfield that lands the rotors. So we've had all kinds of different types of helicopters that can land here as well. And that's another great thing that a lot of the different types of units, sister services, like about this, is you can do all kinds of operations. You can jump, you can sling load. So there's just all kinds of things. It's not all ground-based. You know, you can jump in as well. We do have some dust-offs here. Dust-offs are your medical evacuation helicopters, Blackhawks.
And that's the ones that are out there now?
That's the ones that are out there now, yes. They're out here to do the dust-off. So they're really fascinating, and have dust-off has a great history.
Explain dust-off.
Dust-off is if you were at war and you called for a medical evacuation. The medical helicopters would come in and pull you out. Mm-hmm. So if they had an emergency or somebody was injured, they would come in and land and extract the injured personnel.
People that are full-time that run this base, that's a whole world into itself, isn't it?
And it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the people that work here live all throughout Monterey County and San Luis Obispo County, and they travel in here to work.
Give us an example of some of the things they do to keep things running here.
Well, basically, things we do, the focus primarily, because it's training and exercises, would be my DPTMS, which is basically my operations center. So we run all the ranges for people, the barracks, when people need barracks. They plan the training with the units. You know, they say to the commander, what do you want to achieve when you get here? So once they know that they have the commander's intent, they work with the unit, and they work to ensure that those training goals are met, and that's what they do. So every support element we have here, whether it's personnel, they do ID cards, you know, the operations, the Department of Public Works, they ensure the barracks are functional. So everybody here in some way or another supports the training mission.
And a lot of these people are civilians.
Oh, yes. The majority of my personnel are civilians. Absolutely. So, and that's great. A lot of them are retired military, a lot have never served, but they've been doing this a long, long time, and they're very, very experienced, I would say, in their field. They understand the military, and their priority is to support the mission and support readiness, that these folks leave here better than they came.
Let's jump to specific training exercises that have happened or are happening even as we speak.
Some of the major ones we've had, as I mentioned earlier, was the 7th Infantry Division, which came down from Joint Base Lewis-McChord in Washington. It's a striker unit. It's a combat unit. And they came down here to do a rotation to prepare themselves for the National Training Center rotation. So I think we had about 7,000 troops come down. And, of course, they were completely self-contained, so they had their own supply chain, training, ammo, personnel, PAO, public affairs. But we also have that. So what we do is we work with each one of those different directorates they have, as well as the actual war fighters, and we supplement and we help them ensure they, again, meet their training objectives. And like I said earlier, General Burleson, who's the commander, told me that when he went to NTC, the observer controllers down there were amazed because they had 6 evaluatable areas, and they were proven to be trained in 5 of the 6, and the 6 they were right behind. So they attributed it totally to their rotation here at Fort Hunter Liggett.
And one of the things that's enigmatic to me and yet essential is logistics. Mm-hmm. And along that line, food for these troops. That's incredible.
So what I have here as well, I have what we call tenant units. So they're units that don't readily belong to me, but they kind of inadvertently work for me. So one of them is Logistics Readiness Center. And they handle everything from ice to food, any kind of logistical support. So they also, in turn, when a unit says they're going to come here, they send people out, they meet with all our different directorates, the LRC, the Logistics Readiness Center, our trainers, everybody, and everything is planned and coordinated. So that when they arrive, they've ordered, let's say, 10,000 MREs, mm-hmm. that the LRC will have those ready for them. They will say, we're going to come to the dining facility once a day. They'll plan accordingly to have a certain amount of soldiers go through the dining facility every day.
Interesting. Even fuel for the strikers and whatnot. That's a whole logistics in itself.
Yes, absolutely. So they would bring down their own, what we call fuelers. They would have their own trucks with fuel. But again, that's coordinated as well. Porta potties. You know, I mean, you think of anything that you need to survive. So basically what a fort is or a garrison is a mini city. It's a mini city.
Foldable and transportable.
Yes, that you can basically lift and move.
That's pretty incredible. Let's talk about the exercise that's taking place right now. That's pretty incredible. Like you alluded to, it's a multinational training exercise.
Yes, primarily it's Army Reserve soldiers. And I think we have about 7,000 or so. And it's multiple units. Each unit has specific training goals they want to achieve. But it is a huge endeavor because these units come from all over, from Puerto Rico, New York, Colorado, Arizona. So you're bringing all these units together and trying to pull them all together to execute one large training experience. And it keeps our people really, really busy because our range ops, for example, they have to plot where everybody is so that they don't run over each other. And so it's a great training experience, but it takes a lot of coordination and simple things like you said, feeding them, getting the food out to the field because they stay in the field while they're here. The other thing that we do here as well is we don't just train people in the field. We have what we call the TAS, which is the Total Army School System. And what they do is they retrain soldiers. You might have been, let's say, a quartermaster previously, and now you want to retrain and become a military police officer. So we do that here, and we conduct a lot of classes for that. So we train the MPs here, engineers, civil affairs, transporters. And so sometimes when you're on post, you may see a bunch of, you know, military police cars roaming around or, you know, people out practicing traffic stops.
And this goes on every month throughout the year?
This is continuous. So they continually come and train. It's classes, basically. You're coming in to do a school. So we do that as well.
Let's talk about the citizens' contribution to the military and how that works.
Let me tell you about the Army Reserve. The Army Reserve is integral to the war fight, and the country cannot go to war without the Army Reserve. You know, we are about a quarter million or so strong, and what is unique about the Army Reserve is the civilian skills that they bring, not only with their military skills, but I'll give you a good example. In Iraq, when we were reestablishing public works, things of that nature, because everything was shut down, you know, somebody discovered that, oh my goodness, there's a plumber over in that MP unit. That's what he does in his civilian job. Or there's somebody who is an engineer back home, and they're in a quartermaster unit. I mean, amazingly, they helped turn water back on, electricity, because we bring a different set of skills to the Army, to the war fight, because we not only are trained in what our military skill is and have numerous years. I mean, you've got folks, I mean, I've got 33 years. You've got people that have been in the Army Reserve a long time. So they not only are exceptionally skilled at their military occupational skill, but they bring this whole set of civilian skills that you never know when you might need them.
And there they are.
Yeah, there they are. So that's the brilliance. We call ourselves twice a citizen.
We've been speaking with Colonel Kerry Norman, the base commander at Fort Hunter Liggett in Monterey County. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org.